You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In her fourth novel, World and Town, bestselling author Gish Jen tells the story of Hattie Kong, a 68-year-old Chinese-American retired biology teacher who, after the death of her husband and best friend, finds herself alone in a small New England town, coming to terms with her past and drawn to the forces that make up her new world. It's published by Knopf, and I'm very happy that it brings Gish Jen back to our show today. It's always a pleasure to see you.
It's wonderful to be here.
You've always tackled complex issues in your novels, multiculturalism, identity, the American dream. In this novel, you've added religion to the mix. In fact, fundamentalism. What led you to complicate things even further?
Well, just observation. I mean, you know, the Library Journal called this book a roadmap to roadmap through the minefield that is post 9/11 America. And, you know, I think that's accurate. I mean, I think you only have to look around to realize that fundamentalism is a huge factor in everything that goes on. And I will say that, you know, I do spend a lot of time in northern Vermont, and it's hard not to notice, you know, all the churches. There's actually a mini Bible Belt up there, and it's hard.
Liberal
not,
Vermont.
Yeah, exactly. And up in the very northern part, there's a mini Bible Belt. So there you go from the, you know, land of Bernie Sanders to these churches that have these big crosses on them. And, you know, these are not Methodist churches. You know what I mean? These are not Presbyterian churches. These are independent churches of quite a different stripe.
Is there any fundamentalism in your personal multicultural background?
Not in mine, no. No, I mean, there is religion. And, you know, as you know, I actually have written about religion before. Actually, I wrote about it in Mona in the Promised Land and also in some of my stories. So this is not my first visit to religion. That said, of course, religion in this book plays a much larger part than in some of my other work.
What's Hattie's view of organized religion?
Hattie, of course, is, you know, her mother was a missionary. So, you know, she comes from kind of a complicated background.
She has an Anglo-American missionary mother and a father who claims to be a descendant of Confucius.
Right. Well, her father is a descendant of Confucius. And
well, how many Chinese people are descendants of Confucius?
A lot. Actually, you know, there's a Confucian family graveyard in Chufu, China, which is Shandong province. And, you know, it's very well populated.
And how do people know? I mean, we're going back a long time. They've done genetic studies that have found just how many people are descendants of Genghis Khan. And it's a huge number. But we understand how that worked. They probably had a lot of wives.
Yeah, I don't think we really know, you know, that everybody is a biological descendant of Confucius. And and actually, I will say too that that graveyard, as is described in my book, was dug up during the Cultural Revolution. So what's left of them is just, you know, we have like trace bits of the descendants there now. But that said, you know, there's a huge family. Their last name, they all have the last name Kong, and they are all supposedly descendants of Confucius, and that does include Hattie's father.
So anybody whose name is Kong would claim to be a descendant of Confucius?
I can't say with 100% accuracy that that's true, but I do think that's true.
Well, so her mother was a missionary,
yes,
and she comes out of that kind of family. Would that mean that she would have a natural inclination toward religion or toward rejecting it?
Well, toward rejecting it. That's exactly right. And I think this is you know, her relationship to religion is as complicated as anybody's, right? But right, her immediate heritage really is of rejection, of, you know, a move toward modernity. And although she does have, you know, religion in her background, you know, she's dealing with her relationship to modernity as much as anything else.
More so while she was in China than when she moved to the United States?
I think that, you know, when she's in the United States, she's kind of discovering a new kind of modernity. You know, I mean, her parents were about rejecting religion, but they weren't so much about adopting something else. But there is a way in which her Americanization takes the form of an embrace of science. And, you know, she herself becomes a scientist and becomes sort of anti-superstition and anti-religion as a result of that. So that she has actually kind of, I guess, a couple of different layers of modernity with which she is now grappling in her later years.
Religion often offers its followers something that they desperately need, but sometimes it does it at a very painful cost for some of your characters, particularly a young woman named Sophie, who's a troubled Cambodian girl whose family has just moved down the road from Hattie. How is she affected by religion?
Yeah, well, Sophie is, you know, her parents, of course, were Buddhist. You know, which is true of, you know, 99% of Cambodians. I think the Cambodians always say, you know, to be Cambodian is to be Buddhist. But you know, Buddhism doesn't offer her, you know, the kind of home, the kind of structure that she really needs. And she does find it instead in, you know, in a fundamentalist church. And I will say that this is a story which is becoming, well, it's increasingly common, you know. So if you go to the Water Festival in Lowell, Massachusetts, for instance, and Lowell is, I should say, is the second largest population of Cambodian Americans in America, you will now see, you know, all the Buddhist stuff going on, but you will also see the evangelicals there working the crowd pretty hard.
Well, many people all over the world are becoming evangelicals in South America, which was solidly Catholic for most of its history. There's a very fast-growing evangelical movement.
Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, evangelicalism is a huge, it's a worldwide force.
What is its appeal to somebody who's Cambodian? Is it that it does offer a godhead?
Yeah, you know, the particular church that Sophie becomes involved with, I mean, they have these pamphlets, and the pamphlets say, you know, where friends become family. And I think that's exactly the attraction for Sophie. You know, her own family is kind of a wreck. You know, her father is very damaged by their time in Cambodia and, you know, and his experiences under Pol Pot, as is her mother. And her brother is involved in gangs, and her sisters are in foster homes, and, you know, the whole family is kind of falling apart. And so, yes, it's not just you know, the teachings of the church. It's the welcome of the church.
And also the immigrant experience is quite different for someone like Hattie and someone like Sophie.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. You know, I mean, I think that Hattie also had, you know, needed a family when she came to the United States. But in her case, the family that took her in was the family of Carter Hatch, you know, a family of scientists. So you can sort of see, in a way, Sophie and Hattie, they had the same need, but they were filled in very different ways.
One of the chapters is written in Sophie's voice. It must have been fun for you to go from thinking very much in an older woman's mind to somebody who was quite young.
Yeah, that's right. It really was fun. I mean, I myself, as I was writing it, found myself saying "like" all the time.
Like he goes.
And I will say, you know, in this book, of course, there's also a section that's written, you know, from the point of view of, you know, of a New England farmer, and that was also fun to do.
Well, Sophie seems to struggle less with identity and more with just loneliness.
Yeah. I think that's exactly right. I mean, of course, those things go hand in hand. But like, you know, there's no question but that the collapse of her family is a huge factor in everything that she does.
My guest is Gish Jen, whose latest novel is World and Town, and it is published by Knopf. In your previous novel, The Loved Wife, your protagonist was going through a midlife crisis. In this one, Hattie seems to be going through a senior citizen crisis. Does every new change bring a crisis of its own?
Well, I think every novel brings a crisis, you know. Without no crisis, no novel.
But you didn't think of that. I'm sure you weren't thinking about, well, what crisis am I going to deal with now? I have to write a new book.
No. My characters have crises on their own.
Do you discover them as you're writing them?
Yeah. You know, I think that, you know, with the novel, you know, one piece comes into focus and then another piece. It's all very intuitive. You know, it's like, you know, like those magic eight balls, you know, you turn them and this message comes up.
What about the setting here, the town in Massachusetts of River Lake? Isn't that going through something of a midlife crisis of its own?
Yeah. The town is actually in northern Vermont. It's not specified where it is.
I just assume because you live in Massachusetts.
Right. But No, northern Vermont, yes, it is in a crisis, as are, I think, many small towns in America. I think that, you know, I did call my book World in Town, and that is partly because I do see these towns as really challenged by the forces of globalization. And, you know, it's interesting. I was just in South Hadley, Massachusetts yesterday giving a reading, and, you know, and all the ladies there had just come from a town meeting where they had been very concerned about, you know, the funds for a new school and so on. And I just sort of asked them, so, you know, how's your town? And, you know, is it different now? And they said, yes, it's much, much different. It is much harder to keep the town together. Do you know what I mean? Because of market forces, immigration, you know, kind of a new kind of immigrant that's different than sort of older waves that we knew how to deal with. And other factors too, you know, fundamentalism, and I think that all these towns are kind of beset in a new way.
A big city is more capable of absorbing all of these new things than a small town where everybody knows everybody.
Yeah, I think that they're less prepared. You know, they're less prepared.
Well, how did Hattie wind up in River Lake?
Well, she moves. You know, she's had a lot of personal difficulty. Her husband and her best friend have died back to back. In, you know, in almost an absurd kind of way. They both died of cancer. And she's moved north to start over, as have many of the characters, actually. She's not the only one. Everyone is starting over in this book.
There's another character, Carter, who had been a former love interest of hers, and they have a very complicated relationship. She resents him. because things didn't work out in the past.
Well, he betrayed her. You know, I don't want to give away too much of the book, but he done her wrong.
Carter, like Hattie, was a scientist, but he often hides behind his intelligence and shows little feeling. Why would she be drawn to somebody like that?
Well, you know, she knows a deeper part of Carter. You know, they did grow up together. You know, he was a son in the family to which, you know, who took her in when she first came to the United States. And, you know, she knows kind of, yeah, the younger Carter, you know, kind of the inner Carter, who is not just, you know, a big deal scientist, but who is something more, you know, who actually rebelled against his own family in many ways.
Hattie finds herself almost spying on Sophie's family, going so far as to use binoculars. Why is she so interested in them and affected by them?
Well, you know, of course, they're moved to a trailer right next door to her house, and by a church, and this is something which would probably be interesting to anyone, but they have a lot of interesting going on there. As you know, I don't want to give away too much, but they're doing a lot of things. I think the very first thing is that an enormous TV arrives at their house. You know, where could this TV come from? But I think that in a general kind of way, you know, Hattie in the beginning of the book is somebody who is, you know, in retirement, not just from her job, but from life. And, you know, and then she kind of moves into this stage where she's a spectator, she's looking on. And then from there, she moves on to somebody who is not just a spectator, somebody who's really more involved.
How much of this did you know when you started writing this novel? Is this all stuff that just came along in the writing process?
It comes up in the writing process. You know, you can't possibly plot something like this, or maybe I could if I were much, much smarter. But in the
but
end,
part of the fun is figuring it out and discovering it, isn't
absolutely,
it?
Absolutely. No, you just look for signs of life. You know what I mean? And you can feel it. You know, you can feel it when you have a fish on the line. And, you know, you feel like, you know, you don't really know what the fish is. You don't know. You know what I mean? You're not really sure why this fish bit. But you know you have one on the line and you just kind of try to bring it in.
I spoke recently with Danao Mengistu about being classified solely as a writer of the immigrant experience, and I said, did that bother him? He said, no. What about you?
Well, you know, I think that, you know, maybe on my first two books I didn't mind so much, you know. I think that at this point, put it this way, it bothers me more when, in fact, my book is much broader. And I think it bothers me when – you know, there's a sense that a book that has immigrants in it must be about the immigrant experience and cannot be about America. Do you know what I mean?
But isn't that the same thing in many cases?
Well, exactly. You know, but there is a way.
I mean, America is about the immigrant experience for all but the Native Americans. And even they came over rather late in the story.
Yeah, well, that's true. And in a very general kind of way, you know, this book features people who are immigrants, but also many people who are not immigrants, you know, and it really is about this whole town and what's happening to it. And so I guess I would hate for sort of some, you know, the fact that there are immigrants in it to obscure the real focus of the book.
Gis Chen is the author of 4 novels and a book of short stories, and her honors include the Lannan Literary Award for Fiction, the Mildred and Harold Strauss Living Award from the American Academy of Arts and Sciences. Her latest is called World and Town. It's published by Knopf, and I want to thank you so much for being with us again.
It's really been a pleasure.